Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, sports writer for the Journal, from my Warwick home on a Sunday morning, a rare weekend edition of the pod. I am joined, as always, by my co-conspirator, the sports director at ABC6, the weekend co-host of Cordishy and Coit on WEI Providence, Nick Coit, ladies and gentlemen. Coity, how we living?
Great, Bill. Nice to be joining you on a weekend. Figured, hey, why not? Let's bridge the gap of the weekend by talking some college hoops. We're covering it anyways, so let's talk about it.
Yeah, normally we do this during the week, but it's not like anything else was going on in the sports world, New England this week, huh, Coit?
Oh, God. Oh, man. What a wild time. But, you know, not surprising. I think it was time, Bill. I think it was time. We've talked all about it on Saturday morning, which ironically we didn't have a show yesterday because Odyssey bumped us for their national betting program. Go figure. That's what people care about these days and their money. But yeah, it's wild. Wild to think that this man who has been part of our lives for the last quarter century, who's transformed everything there is to be a sports fan in this region, along with his quarterback and his owner, no longer. It's wild to think about, but it was time. It was time.
And of course, we're talking about Bill Belichick, the now former Patriots coach. Who would have thought we'd be saying that in the manner in which the relationship ended? You know, they can call it a parting of the ways all they want. Bill Belichick was fired by Robert Kraft. And he was fired because of diminishing returns on the field. And still, shocking in a way, because as you said, his greatness the previous two decades, his marriage with Tom Brady, and what that produced, 6 Super Bowls, 9 Super Bowl appearances, all the AFC Championship games and AFC East titles, and the winning that just seems so routine in a league that is set up for it not to be routine. It's just so staggering when you look back at it. Robert Kraft making a decision, actually two decisions, to move on from Belichick and to elevate Gerard Mayo. But Coit and the rest of the media contingent in the state, for the most part, have been on Belichick watch throughout the week and you know, spent a lot of time up in Foxborough. And that left limited time for the pod. Here we are on a Sunday and felt like it was a good chance to reconnect. And Coit, we got a lot to talk about here. Both good and bad on the local college basketball scene. Let's start with some positivity. That goes against my normal nature. As some people would say, I'm a bit cynical, and I fully admit to that. But I liked what I saw yesterday at my game in Kingston. URI 89, UMass 77, the renewal of the old New England rivalry, the old Yankee Conference foes. For the 162nd time, I think it was. And the Rams, Coit, rolling at this point. 3-0 in the Atlantic 10. They sit with Dayton and Richmond as the only unbeaten teams in the league. 4 straight wins overall. 14 three-pointers in the game. 60% shooting from deep. They've only made more three-pointers in a game twice since January 2017. The confidence from this team, and I know you were in the building yesterday at the Ryan Center, the confidence is palpable. You can feel it in the air. You could almost see it yesterday on the players' faces, in the huddles, the way they performed, the way they took care of the ball, the way they executed against a UMass team that wanted to go out there and play football at both ends. The Rams they've caught on to something here, haven't they?
Confidence in sports, we talk about it so much, Bill, and we always, I mean, it's one of those cliche questions. You know, people make fun of TV guys because TV guys will ask the basic, the generic questions like, how confident are you? Those sorts of things, right? But no. It really is. It's not a tangible thing, but it is in a lot of different ways. There's signs of it. You know what I'm saying? And when you look at this team compared to where they were a month ago, it's wild. Just it's mannerisms, it's body language, it's play on the floor, it's all those things, the way that these kids are carrying themselves. It is so evident that they are bursting with confidence right now because they have their full team on the floor, and this team feels that when it has its full team on the floor, it can play with anybody. That's the confidence it has right now. And I think when you insert, we've talked about David Green at length here the last month, but we'll keep talking about him because the Rams haven't lost with him on the floor. Since he's been inserted into the lineup, he's been a game changer for them. You asked Archie Miller around the holidays, do you have an alpha? And at the time, he said no. If you asked him that question today, he would say yes, and it would be David Green. And that has helped everybody around the squad sort of settle into their roles. And it's contagious the way that they're playing too. That confidence is contagious. The effort is contagious. Seeing Jaden House with that defensive ram of the game chain after the game, wearing it around the arena, first of all, it's cool when you see a kid beaming like that when he gets something like that. It's pretty cool. He walked in, he's like, wow, yeah, this is pretty cool. And I think part of it is because we know how good of an offensive player he is, but to be recognized for his efforts on the other end, which he gave great efforts on the other end in this game yesterday, it's all of those things put together, and you've got yourself a really great story right now with Rhode Island. And I'm fascinated to see how it goes moving forward. I mean, they've got a huge challenge coming up here with St. Bonaventure. They're making the difficult trip to Olean. I don't know the trip. You know the trip. You've told me how difficult it is. You're facing, a great program and a great coach, Mark Schmidt. Like, this is a stiff test, but this team is going to go in there confident, and that's a great thing. I think you're going to get their best when they're out there, and you're seeing the appreciation of it by the fan base too, because the fans showed up on Saturday. They showed up for that game. That was one of the best crowds I've seen in a while for a URI men's game. And no, not students aren't back yet. Semester doesn't start till next week. So good for them for showing up and giving the appreciation. All of that put together, it was a really great Saturday. It's been a really great month stretch here for Archie Miller's Rams.
Best crowd of the season at the Ryan Center, and the game looked fun. Looked like the players were having fun. It looked like the fans were
Quite
having
fun.
fun. And we haven't seen much of that in recent years at URI. It's been a little while since basketball looked fun on the men's side. And when Jaden House is getting 50-50 balls and driving to the rim, finishing through contact for a three-point play midway through the first half, you're thinking, ooh, he's going to have a day here. Had 29 points in the game. That's a season high. David Green, who House said after the game, yep, he's the guy. He changes everything. They were together at the post-game podium. He has 24 points. Cam Estevez has come into his own as a freshman. He had 16. You think about where his future will be in the game. He makes it look easy at times. Just so smooth. Such a quick release on his jump shot. Does not look out of place at all on certain nights. They got a special player in him. And just the way they answered UMass's physicality, I thought, they got beat up on the offensive glass. They gave up 18 offensive rebounds, but they only gave up 11 points off those, which says that they played good defense, first shot and second shot. They defended the floor well. UMass was barely 40% from the field. 3 for 15 from three. They couldn't run offense. URI didn't let them run offense. They're trying to drive to the rim, and URI put bodies in front of them. Made it difficult, walled them off. To think if URI had cleaned it up on the glass, and shot free throws a little better in the second half, they win that game by 20, easy, maybe 25. I think we're right about at the outset where Archie Miller has this thing turning the corner. And maybe I expected more of that going into year three. And generally, that's the time where a program makes a jump under a new coach. That's where you like to see it. But they're 9-7 now. That matches last year's win total. They're 3-0 in the A-10. They're two short of their conference win total from last year. They've got 15 games left. You're talking about a trip to St. Bonaventure and then a reunion at Dayton next Saturday. Both of those would be really tough games. There's no question about that. But they have put themselves in a position here where they can have a season. where you could think about finishing in the middle of the league or a little better. Where you don't need to be concerned about playing with the dregs of the league. Your talent level is better than that. Your top end performance, which you've shown, is better than that. And I take all of that as really encouraging signs about where this is right now at URI and where this could go.
And I think listening to Coach Frank Martin yesterday, in the post game, we had a chance to talk to him for a few minutes. It was interesting to just sort of he I asked him about just David Green and what he does for the Rams, but he kind of went into like overall what Archie's working with here and his rotation, and it kind of struck me like, huh, okay, wow. He looked at it and he said, yeah, David allows him to do this, but now that he's in there and now that they've got Fuchs back, he's healthy, they can go small, they can go big. He's got three bigs. I think that became noticeable because of the foul count yesterday, which was high in the game.
What are you trying to say, Coy?
High in the game. I'm trying to say, I don't know what the A10 record is for time of game, but we were creeping close to it.
You think 47 fouls was a little much? You think Michael Lacchiappelli
No.
and Ian McClenning might have been a little whistle happy in that game?
No, never. No.
I mean, let's be fair.
Yeah.
It was a physical game. There's no question about it. But it did
But
seem excessive at times, the foul count. A
little bit.
little
Yeah, a
bit.
little bit. Anyways, I just listening to Coach Martin talk about it, the reason I bring that up is because Rhodey had three bigs with four fouls at one point in the second half. I know Jeremy Fumina was the guy that fouled out, but I would think it was Fumina, Fuchs, and who was the other guy that had four? I'm trying to think of the other person that had four for them. Tyson Brown, maybe. Might have been Tyson Brown. I think.
Let's take a look.
Yeah.
Fumina, Fuchs, and Tyson Brown. Correct.
Okay. All right. I win my trivia for the day.
You do.
but that. Him saying that was like, well, that's actually a good thing because those guys can all cycle in, they can contribute. Archie's got a little bit of depth there. And it was kind of like, yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. Now that Green's in there, yeah, he can do this, he can do that. I'm like, boy, okay. Now you look at it and you say, this is the team that Archie Miller wanted to put on the floor. This is the team that his staff helped recruit to put together to put on the floor. This is the team they envisioned. And they're having success because they're finally able to coach the team that they wanted to coach. And so it struck me the depth, the talent level, and now that it's sort of coming together, you're right. You look at it and you say, well, this team can really have a season. They don't have to play day one of the A10 tournament. They're not going to finish where they were slotted to finish preseason. They have a chance to go middle of the pack because they have a good coaching staff, and now they've got the players and the depth that they want. And it's gelling together. And guys are figuring out, okay, this is what I can do. This is what I can do. And I asked Archie too about winning plays with David Green. And I think you're seeing more of that. He sets the tone, and other guys are following along with that. And you're seeing more and more and more of that. And that's when things start to become habit and a culture. And that's why you look at it and you say, yeah, this thing is starting to really ascend here.
Yeah, you look at what they did earlier in the week, winning at Davidson. And granted, Davidson isn't the vintage Davidson of, 2016 or 17 or 18 when they had Peyton Aldridge and Kellen Grady and those guys. But there have been some really good URI teams who have not won at Davidson. I think back to the 2017-18 group who won the Atlantic 10. And I remember being down there for a game late in the season where URI just hit the wall with about 2.5 minutes left, lost a big lead and lost the game. And that's a team with Jarrett Terrell and EC Matthews. And you're looking at some all-time URI greats on that team. They didn't win every year at Davidson. That's not an easy trip. It's not an easy place to go. And URI handled that game the other night. They had the lead pretty much throughout the second half. And even when they did fall behind, it was only a couple points and they responded immediately. And it looks like a group that if we go back to where we started on this, they just believe a certain way right now that they didn't before. Is it excusable to lose at home to Brown and to New Hampshire? Generally, based on history, you would say no. And I would also say that if they played those games again right now, I don't have any doubt that they would win both of them.
They're not losing those games right now.
Now,
No
I
way.
know it doesn't work that way, but this team, this version, the way that they're playing right now, those losses don't happen. They're in a much different place overall than they are now. Not to say that they would be a postseason contender or an at-large bid or anything else. You needed to win a couple games at Mohegan for that to happen. But you look at the last four games, they're up almost 70 spots in KenPom. That tells you a lot about their efficiency at both ends of the floor. You know, Archie said yesterday how much cleaner they're playing offensively, how much better their execution is at that end of the floor. You look at yesterday, you have 10 turnovers in the game, which is a low number against that defense. You know, those guys, those bodies coming at you, that length inside. You know, UMass physically, if you look at them in the layup lines when they get off the bus, you think, man, these guys are imposing.
Linebackers.
Yeah, they are. You know, Keon Thompson looks like he could play for the Patriots. I mean, really, that guy doesn't skip a day in the weight room. He's, if I had to line up against him, I'd say, nope, no thanks. Anybody else, coach? I'll guard anyone else, not this guy, because he's going to run me over and God knows what's going to happen here. But you or I just treated it like a minor inconvenience, just moved the ball around, found the open man, made open shots, got to the foul line, made all their free throws in the first half. There was composure there. There was belief there, a little bit of swagger there. It was impressive to watch. It really was. It was, and it was nice to see in person, after all the struggles they've had the last 2 or 3 years, the fact that they're going to give us a basketball season here in Kingston. That's fun.
It's really fun. It's really fun. And it makes you think, okay, now you're building it in the right direction. You know, where do you go from here? You know, go through the conference schedule, see where you land in the A-10 tournament, see what you can do there. You never know. You never know. They play a season for a reason. And I know you go through non-conference play and you're like, you're not supposed to lose to New Hampshire at home. You're not supposed to lose to Brown at home, all that. Sometimes those things are good for you. You know, I know it's you're up in arms, you're throwing your arms up, you're frustrated, they lose five straight, but you go through these things so that you can come out on the other side better. And right now they're coming on the other side better. Now, again, adding a player of David Green's caliber to the mix, that certainly helps you turn a corner. But, you know, they've seen what the struggles have been like. They've gotten through them. Now they're seeing what success is like. Now they're seeing what their efforts can do. I mean, and that's all good stuff. So yeah, this is fun. This is really fun.
How you handle success is a whole different challenge. That's usually the fun challenge for a coach. They'd
Yeah,
rather
right.
handle success than handle losing. And Archie Miller gets to see the good side of it now, as they go to St. Bonaventure and as they go to Dayton, coming up next week. The Bonnies lost at home to Fordham the other night, which was kind of a surprise. Dayton had a real tough home game with UMass the other night. UMass, who played without Matt Cross at the Ryan Center, it should be noted, their preseason all-conference forward, not having him, a big loss for the Minutemen. You or I will be tested at UD Arena. I would imagine that, you know, I don't think Archie is a terribly emotional guy in any way in a professional setting, but I would imagine he's going to feel something going back to Dayton. That's certainly a place where, you know, he made his coaching bones. You know, reached an Elite Eight, made four straight NCAA tournaments. He built the premier program in the Atlantic 10. That earned him a chance at Indiana. And that contract with Indiana set up his family for their future, set up his grandkids for their future. You know, it's the type of move that you make in coaching for your family, you know, for your personal life. You know, it's life-changing money when you do something like that, and it's a life-changing opportunity to try to coach at a blue blood like Indiana, a place that has such great tradition, such a great fan base, in such a tough league. You know, and he laid the foundation for all that at Dayton. So I would imagine next Saturday at UD Arena, he's going to feel a certain type of way. I would imagine he'd want his team to represent him and URI in a certain type of way when they go up against the Flyers. That'll be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. They have a great fan base, obviously. Dayton is passionate, so I'm sure they'll give him a nod. I'm sure he'll give them a nod.
No
You know,
question.
but I know, yeah, but I know he's focused on this team, and I think rolling in with this particular team, the way it's playing right now, it'll be a feel good thing because they were rolling in and they weren't playing well. Sure, you give a nod, but then it's like, all right, well, back to my current reality, but that's not the case. This team is really playing well, coming together. So I think they'll see the fingerprints of an Archie Miller team, you know, when the Rams roll in there to UD Arena.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating. I have having been to UD Arena, having seen Dayton URI games there, I can tell you it is a special place, with no peer in the Atlantic 10. That fan base and that environment is different. It just is. I can't really explain it. I remember when Sloan Freeman was an undergrad at URI and he was doing student radio, their senior year, they had some money in the budget to take a couple trips. And he said, "Where should we go?" And I said, "Go to the Dayton game if you're on the
Go to
road."
Dayton.
I said, "UD Arena is awesome." I said, "You guys will love it. If you have enough money and you can get flights out there and stay in a hotel there or whatever else, go to Dayton." And I remember him saying after, he's like, "Yeah, that was amazing." And I was like, "Yeah, it's pretty good. It's
And
definitely
now he's a clean cut, fist pumping
man."
member of the Rams family.
He is emerging elite URI media. I mean, let's be serious. Let's be serious. We kid, we laugh, but Stone is a star. If he was not
Oh,
working,
yeah.
if he was not working in marketing at that school, he'd have a freelance contract with ESPN and any other network that he wanted. And he would be on the digital call for various sports in various markets. I have no doubt.
Oh, yeah. You know my feelings on Stone Freeman.
I
That's
have
my
no doubt.
guy.
Did
That's
he
my
take
guy.
your class at URI?
Oh, no. No,
No.
no, no. We were teaching peers because he taught one section of it. What was it, last semester, whatever. But he was Stone was the first intern that Ian and I had together at Channel 6.
Okay.
Yeah, once it was the fall after Ian came in, Ken retired. Stone was our first intern.
Okay.
So, and he had reached out a couple years before, so it was in the making, but it all came together beautifully.
Yeah, the road trips for URI when you don't have Steve McDonald and Chris DiSano, you've got Stone Freeman and Silk Owens. It's pretty solid number two pairing. If
Amen.
we're being honest, you get Stone as a terrific play-by-play guy in his own right, and you get a program legend in the number two seat. Not so bad.
Pretty good.
Not so bad. Maybe we'll be hearing from them here shortly as URI gets back out on the road for a couple contests here. Quite the feelings are not as good downtown right now. And we'll turn to the Providence men next. Saturday, they had their own game. At the same time, they were hosting another Miller brother. Sean Miller was here with Xavier. As Archie said, we didn't have a chance to connect over the weekend. Sean was coming off a loss at UConn, and I knew he was feeling a certain type of way because I didn't hear from him, which meant Sean was in a bunker trying to figure out what was going on after he lost at the Cintas Center to the Huskies the other night. And man, the Musketeers took it out on the Friars on Saturday. The reeling Friars at this point, 85-65, a game that was only a 1-point spread at halftime, and Xavier dominated in the second half. They locked Providence up on defense. They ran away from them at the offensive end with 3-point shooting and crisp execution. And the Friars here, Coit, in the aftermath of the injury to Bryce Hopkins, they were very competitive at Creighton. They were very competitive at St. John's, a game that I went to on Wednesday night at Madison Square Garden. But in this one, the roof fell in. And, Kim English, after the game, was very blunt, criticized himself, criticized his team, said, "I thought this was going to be a great game between two desperate teams. There was one desperate team, and that was Xavier." And right now, Coy, it's getting away from the Friars here. And, we might have suspected how difficult it would be to replace someone like Bryce Hopkins. I mean, that's obvious. He's a great player. He was a much better defender this season. He had grown at that end of the floor. Was guarding threes and fours and being physical. His offensive game was right where it was last season. The 3-point shooting aside, he was just as effective inside. He was just as productive, at 17 and about 8.5 rebounds a game. But this, I don't think we saw something like this coming, where the Friars are playing at the Amp on a Saturday afternoon in front of a sellout crowd. You get a 1-point game at halftime, and for them to just capitulate in the second half, we just haven't seen that very often from this group.
Well, and it started at the end of the first half because I think they came out strong, had a double digit lead midway through the first half. And, you're scoring, you're getting contributions, things are going well. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed like they lost their defense, they got discouraged, and it all just sort of caved in. And, Xavier was making some shots. They were making some shots, but I don't know. They never really picked themselves up off the mat after a few haymakers, and that's the disappointing part. I think you were worried with Bryce, as good of a player as he is on both ends. I think the offensive part may have been, and I don't know if you agree with this, may have been the bigger worry for me than the defensive part, because I think Providence has good defenders next to Bryce. Devin is one of the best defenders in the country. Of course. But, other guys that have been out there, I think, are expected to guard well. And, I think even as a freshman, a young raw talent like Garway Duwal, he's given you some contributions on that end. He's given you other we talked about the game where he didn't score a point in 21 minutes, 22 minutes. What was it, either the Butler game or the Marquette game? And that was okay because he gave you so many contributions, defensive end, getting on the, like all the things that he did. And so you looked at that and you said, okay, if they can find offense spread out through this lineup from other guys, then they should be okay because their defense will still be there. That effort, that execution, all that will still be there. That was the discouraging thing with this Xavier game, is that you're at home and you gave up 85 points. You let the defense disappear. And I don't know if it was just, snowballing offense from Xavier, or I don't know if it was your offense being discouraged, that sort of thing, and just kind of bleeding into the defensive end, but something went awry and it's not good. They're still figuring things out, get that, but now you don't want it to go too far, because if it does, then you're really starting to go down a slippery slope.
Yeah, Carter is an elite defender on the perimeter. He heads that unit. Duro takes up a lot of space inside. He's a legitimate big guy who plays under the rim. And then you've got some length at other positions. So you can scheme it on defense generally. But you're right. The offensive end has been a struggle throughout the year, even when Bryce was healthy. And now it's been exposed even further. This is a team that wants to shoot threes. It doesn't have great shooters. It's interesting stylistically. To watch them try to play that way. And yesterday in the first half, they shot the ball well. In the second half, they were 1 for 13 from three. They end up
There you
eight
go.
for 30. They're 32% for the year. This is a team that, if they want to get offense from the perimeter, it's not going to be easy in that way. They don't necessarily have marksmen out there. Carter has made a huge jump in terms of the way he shot the ball from three. Last year he's barely 30%. This year he's touched, he's up around 40. Made a huge improvement, and that's a big part of what makes him a much more projectable prospect at the next level. But essentially, what you saw yesterday is, unless Carter is immortal in these games, Providence is going to struggle at that end of the court. And you look at a few guys. Josh Aduro had a better game yesterday, had 20 points. I know he's been struggling with an ankle. I also think that playing against Big East front courts is a little different. And he's trying to go up against Kalkbrenner and Joel Soriano, and those guys are different beasts, quite literally, than what he's seeing night in and night out in the Atlantic 10. But there are a few other guys on this team, Coy, that I would imagine Kim English would have wanted more from. He started Corey Floyd, in a couple games. He brought him off the bench against Xavier. He's got 3 points in his last three games. It's just not enough. Garwood Duwall's a freshman, true freshman, isn't ready. And that's not a knock on him. He's just playing against guys who are 4 and 5 years older than him. That's very difficult to do. I understand he's a heralded recruit, heralded pro prospect, but in college it doesn't always translate right away. It is an old man's game. It always has been. The guy from Ecoyt, who I really hoped would take a step forward and hasn't really yet, is Ticket Gaines. He's 1 for 6 yesterday from the floor there, all 3-pointers. He has 5 points in the game. This is a fifth-year senior, fifth-year graduate player. A guy who in the past has averaged 10 points and 8 rebounds over the course of a full season. You would have hoped that he would have stepped in and given you some production in place of Bryce Hopkins, because he's the most veteran guy. He's the one who's most familiar with Kim and the way he coaches and the way he wants to play. And if I was Devin Carter, and I know he sent a text message to Kim English after Bryce's injury was confirmed and said, "I'm ready to step forward and lead. I'm ready to be the focal point on this team." If I was Devin Carter, there would be two or three guys in that locker room who I would be challenging to do a little bit more. And I might be doing it rather forcefully if I was him, because the other night against St. John's, he was absolutely outrageous in that game.
Would you
How can
call
you
him a
be
tornado, right? A
a
tornado?
tornado out there? How can you be a 6'3" guard playing against a Rick Pitino team, have 31 points, 13 rebounds, and 4 steals? Just an outrageous performance, like for the ages.
Incredible.
You won't
Incredible.
see many guards who play at Providence or anywhere else for that matter have a 30 and 10 game. And add on to that, defend the way he does. I mean, just outrageous. And to see it in person, and to see Providence almost pull that game out after they fall behind by 15 so early, they lose 75-73 down the stretch. I wrote for the Journal this week, it would be a shame to see his brilliance wasted in a season that's going off the rails here. I really hope that Providence can find some answers and get it back on track, because that guy is special and deserves a national stage.
He's awesome to watch. He's awesome to watch. And every Friar fan agrees. He's just a. When you watch somebody give that much energy, will, heart, toughness, all those things, it's a joy to watch, win or lose. And that's why that night, I think, Providence fans were kind of, down about the loss, but they looked at it and said, I mean, you're not going to get much more out of your top guy on the floor, and that was the most impressive thing. So you're right. Hopefully they can figure it out. You mentioned a few names here. One name that I'm going to look at going forward that I wonder how the coaching staff maybe gets him more minutes on the floor is Rich Barron. Because I think at times he has shown the ability to really fit in here in the college game. And he's got a smooth 3-point shot. And if you want to find more offense, more good 3-point shooting, might want to get that guy on the floor more. And so I wonder, I'm sure the coaching staff looks at it too and says, maybe we're trying to figure this thing out. Maybe that's one potential solution. So I wonder with him, because I think he could really help them. And if you can find a guy like that that can come in, give you a spark from the 3-point line, that's one of those things that's contagious. And you hit a few in a row, it changes a game. 3-point shooters like that can change a game. So can he help them on the defensive end too? He's got a body for it, even as a freshman. I think he's got a body for it. So, that's one guy I'm looking at going forward. I wonder how they use him. I wonder if there's an increase there in his workload.
And all of this, of course, comes at a really difficult point in the schedule. You're at DePaul next, a game that you should win. Certainly, DePaul's terrible, but are there any certainties at this point? You wonder. I mean, I certainly expect them to win Wednesday. I think you go out there and this is your chance to get right. Then you have a week off and you go to Seton Hall, who's already beaten you at home and is playing with great confidence right now. And then, Coit, your next home game
What's
on the
next?
27th.
What's next, Bill?
There was a certain guy we used to know called Ed Cooley who will be coming to
What's
town,
next, Bill?
who's playing at UConn as we speak, on the Big Fox, potential number one UConn if they happen to win this game. Could the unthinkable happen, Coit, on the 27th? Are we there now?
I'm sure that there is concern in the fan base in places, I'm sure. But let's see. Let's see how the next week plus goes. Get the DePaul game, get some time off, get some time to get on the floor, a few practices in, a week's worth. That helps. And see what you can do. And imagine, imagine them they're going to Seton Hall and trying to steal one. And all of a sudden stealing one. How good would that be for this team?
Be great.
So
They
as
need it desperately.
absolutely. So there is as much as this is a discouraging stretch and as tough as that loss at home was to Xavier, there's time. It's a long college basketball season. Things can happen. We were just talking about how a month ago URI didn't look like they were going anywhere. And now they're one of what, three teams that's got three wins in the A-10 so far? Pretty good. So it's a long season. There's time. We'll see. But yes, I know the 27th is coming up, so we shall see.
It can't happen, can it?
We got a couple podcasts until then, so
We got a lot more time to
yeah.
preview that one for sure. We'll go next to a team that I think has followed a pretty steady trajectory by comparison, and that's Bryant, Coit. Bryant, I think, has been a team that, aside from a little bit of a shaky start and obviously some off-court considerations there, going from Jared Grosso to Phil Martelli Jr. I think Brian has sort of played how we might have expected them to, if not better than how we might have expected them to.
I think better. I think they were. I thought we expected them to be good. I think they've been better. I think they've been really rolling.
They did some things in the non-conference and won a couple games that maybe you didn't expect them to. Certainly Florida Atlantic. Beating Towson in double overtime, beating Drexel right now looks like a really good win. Drexel's 5-0 in the league starting off. And for Bryant, the beat goes on. Saturday night at New Hampshire, 89-74. Bryant's 3-0 in the America East. They've won 5 of their last 6, 8 of their last 11. Beat Binghamton the other night at home in a game where they really only played 25 minutes. We're up 24 points and sort of stuck it in neutral the rest of the way and cruised. But Bryant at full power is really fun to watch. And, we've alluded to it, I don't know how many times on the pod, but it's because of the rotation and the role definition and the fact that you've got two of the five best players in the league fronting the lineup in Sharif Gross-Bullock and Earl Timberlake. You can lean on those guys every night. And then all of a sudden, when you go to New Hampshire, and Daniel Rivera hits for 25 points on 11 for 18 shooting, 9 rebounds, 2 block shots. That athleticism just comes screaming off the floor and through your computer or television screen. Bryant's got enough to compete in that league. They do. I know they were picked third, and you always wonder about preseason predictions and how valid they're going to be and how much stock we should put into them. I felt like Bryant would be a good team from the start. I think they've validated that. I think they've done it at the defensive end as well. I think they've been solid there. But I really like what I've seen out of them, and I think Saturday was just the latest example.
Another great day. I mean, Rivera obviously with 25. We've talked about how good of an athlete he is coming from the A-10, doing a lot of different things. 25 and 9, I should say, because he flirted with the double double. Pretty good. Gross Bullock is going to score for you. He's going to give you 20 plus every day, and just the continued. Just all around affect the floor game of Earl Timberlake to me is just such a that may be what has helped in terms of maybe exceeding my expectations is you knew Earl was an all-league player, but boy, he's just transformed. I mean, it's another I just even if it's a modest number at four assists, just that four assists and the 11 rebounds, 15 points. Like he's just affecting the game. He takes over the floor when he's out there. It's really fun to watch. And the way that they play, to be able to bring in a guy like Pinzon, okay, maybe you get off to a slow start. This guy will come in and he'll take over offensively. Like there's so many different guys that can do different things. Their experience together from last season. I like a lot of different things about Bryant, and they just continue to roll. I think the defensive end, again, I mean, you know how good Daniels is with UNH? He gets 18 points, 18 and 6, but doesn't take the most amount of shots in his team, which tells me they tried at least to get the ball out of his hands a little bit. Now, it was Robinson that took the most shots, and, you know, he got 18 too, but, you know, took 18 shots. So it's, you know, I like what they're doing on that end too, and trying to, you know, slow teams down, but they can blitz teams with their offense too. And that's the impressive thing. These guys can go on really, really hot stretches. So, they just continue to roll because I think they gel together early, and, you know, it's been really, really impressive. I said to you, I think they compete for a league title here.
Yeah, Earl is a guy who, you know, he almost looks like he feels the game at this point more than he's playing the game, if that makes
Totally.
sense.
Totally.
Right? Like he's just everything about him out there just looks so natural and in the flow, and it never seems like he's forcing or, you know, trying to take over or you know, disappearing, going the other direction. It's none of that. He's just a constant out there. And if you look at their KenPom page, there's a lot of green in that defensive column. The areas where they struggle are they give up too many offensive rebounds and they foul a little too much. And we'll blame Phil on that for riding the refs. That's clearly his fault, right? It's got to be. He's getting the bad whistle, right? We'll just blame Phil. Let's say, Phil, shame on you. You know, what are you doing? Be nicer
Keep
to
a
the officials, Phil.
cool head,
Keep a
Martelli
cool
Jr.,
head,
will
right?
you?
Yeah, Phil, right? Yeah, because Phil is the angriest guy in college basketball, right? Clearly. How does Phil not get a good whistle? It's ridiculous, isn't it?
I know.
Like, come on. That seems wrong. You know, and his players aren't exactly out there clotheslining people either. Like, that seems a little ridiculous. The offensive rebound stat I can understand because they are undersized and they're playing a five out lineup when they have Connor Withers out there, and there's not necessarily post presence type guy on their roster. So I could see other teams hitting them on the defensive glass. I get that. But they guard the three and the two, both in the top 50 nationally. They're 15th in block percentage, which speaks to their athleticism at all five positions. You know, and
That's
if they're
effort.
that's effort. And if they're going to be that disruptive on the defensive end, with the skill that they have at the offensive end and the synergy that they have and the way that they play together. And the chemistry that they've developed from only playing seven or eight guys, the fact that they're all very comfortable playing with each other, it just continues to raise their ceiling on what they could be. And, you know, when you're a good team, you go on winning streaks like this. You can put three and four and five and six games together, 2 and 3 weeks together over the course of a year. And that's what Bryant has turned into here. I think. And we asked Daniel Rivera this the other night after they beat Binghamton, just the benefits of that non-conference schedule and how hard it was and how much that has helped them into America East. And he said, oh, yeah, a lot. He said, because we played some really good teams, and not many of those games were at home. And we really got tested in a certain way and found out a lot about ourselves. And, you know, Phil didn't really have a lot of choices. We've talked a lot on the pod about scheduling and how a lot of coaches wouldn't take his calls, and they had to play some games that maybe they didn't want to play. You know, certainly they don't want to go to Ole Miss on New Year's Eve. Like that's brutal. Ole Miss is a good team. You're away from your family. It's New Year's Eve. It's an afternoon game. You're probably going to lose it. No one wants to do that for a paycheck. Not at all. But Phil took some of those games and said, hey, look, guys, like, let's just go out and learn something about ourselves and test ourselves. We'll be better for it down the line. Here we are. We're down the line, and they are indeed better for it.
No, I the block stat stood out to me this week. And just how good they are, and the fact that they don't have, there's no Hall Elias on this team. They don't have that. And so that to me says everybody is bought in on defending and protecting the rim. That's impressive. that's impressive with guys that just aren't oversized. And that's, yeah, I think that just speaks to the will that they have on the defensive end, the buy-in, and that's why they've been impressive on that end so far.
Week off for the Bryant men now. They have a bye. They will play two more road games when they come back at Albany and old friend Sebastian Thomas on Saturday.
Drop
And then they'll be
30,
at.
I think, on Saturday. Drop 30. I
Perhaps
think he
let's take a
did.
look. I know he's been productive, playing well there, starting, playing major minutes. He did indeed have 30 in a 20-point home win against Binghamton. His last four games, 32, 24, 22, 30. Pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Pretty
He
good.
fits in.
Yeah,
It's
that'll
a
work.
fit. It's a fit in that program. They identified that they really liked Sebastian there, and they're giving him the keys, and he's running with it. Good for him. Good for him.
The shooting is better across the board. The assist rate's about the same. Turnover rate's dropped considerably. He's playing 86% of minutes at Albany. It's been a great fit for him. And certainly they are a team at 2-0 in America East, who looks like a little bit of a surprise at the top of the league, which is nice to see. You expected Vermont to be there, you expect UMass Lowell to be there. Those are the two teams who are picked ahead of Bryant in the preseason, but if you get an Albany or New Hampshire or somebody like that challenging, it's nice to see. It says something for the depth of the league for sure. And we're all in
Looking at the
favor
top,
of surprises. We like that.
looking at the top three scorers in the league right now. I was just looking it up because I'm like, you drop 30, you're gonna be starting to flirt with it. It's Daniels, it's Sharif Gross-Bullock, and it's Sebastian Thomas.
Pretty good.
With Ahmad Robinson fifth, actually, with UNH. So maybe it was sort of a pick your poison thing with those two guys on Saturday. But look, Bryant did a great job, just kind of containing them. 18 points for those two guys is probably pretty modest.
Well, Daniels is the guy. I mean, we saw what he did against URI. He is an explosive player.
Really good.
Somebody who for everyone who likes to say, "Oh, NIL and it's going to be free agency and whatever else." Well, how did Clarence Daniels stay in New Hampshire then?
Wild.
You're going to tell me that no one called him?
Yeah, right.
No one tried to offer him a few hundred grand to come play like, eighth man at a Big East school? No one did that?
Right.
Really?
Because he'd do a heck of a job
I
wherever he
find that hard to
goes.
believe.
Yeah.
What I see is UNH finding a way to retain its best player, which means that every other school can do that, can't they, Coy?
They can. Absolutely. It
Imagine
is
that. You can pay
possible.
him too. Isn't that shocking?
You sound like you're doing an infomercial. And
It
you could pay him too.
is. It's the anti-guardrails commercial. You can come here. Never mind. Oh God, NIL and player movement, it's going to destroy college sports. No, it's not. No, it's not. You just have to play by different rules now. That's all. Is it going to change things? Yes. Might it change things for the better or worse for your program? Yes, absolutely. But it's also going to challenge you if you really want to be good to get into your development department, to beat on your donors, to say, "Hey, you want to be good? We need cash." Period. These guys are worth a lot more than a scholarship. Okay. Like, that's nice. You come out, you don't have the mountains of student loan debt that so many other people do. Right. Fine. But you're in the NCAA tournament, you're worth a lot more than your 40,000 to go to URI or whatever it is. Your
Absolutely.
45,000 to go to UNH. Like, you're worth a lot more. You're worth millions to the school in marketing and in applications and in new interest and in advertising and in everything else, TV rights, whatever you want to go to. So, Clarence Daniels, we salute you, sir. Well done. Well done. And if you need a couple agents, hit us up.
Hey, how you doing?
We'd be glad to come up to Durham. It's a great town, as you know, Coy. You've spent a little time there, I would imagine.
So I have not, but obviously I've heard legend because my father is a distinct graduate of the
Yes.
University of New Hampshire.
Dennis
So
Coy, ladies and gentlemen.
plenty of time up at Libby's, or I think it's actually Nick's now, but it used to be Libby's because Libby was the owner.
That's right.
So yeah.
That's right. It was Libby's. Correct. Yeah. What a place. Tremendous. We'll have Dennis on the pod someday to tell us some Durham stories. How about
Yeah.
that?
Yeah, that's dangerous.
It'd be hilarious. Coy, we'll go to another team that looks like they do have a chance, as we were mentioning with Albany, who's outperforming some America East predictions early. We'll go to another team that has a chance, we think, you and I think, to outperform some preseason predictions, and that's the Brown women. 2-0 in the Ivy League for the first time in 18 years, which seems hard to believe, after beating Yale on Saturday, 76-71, a game that wasn't really that close. Brown had a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter. They almost collapsed. Would have been a shame. They pretty much stopped playing with about 4.5 minutes to go, but had done enough to beat the Bulldogs to that point. And Coy, we could see this coming in the non-conference. You could see it happening in real time. When Brown wins at Georgetown, when Brown beats Providence at home, when Brown gives a very good account of itself against URI, before fading in the second half a little bit and losing at home. You could see it coming together. And you look at what they've done in two Ivy League games. Going to Dartmouth, they blew out the big green. Against Yale for 35 minutes, you're dominating the game. You're playing the Bulldogs off their home court. Brown's in a position here, Coy, going into a Monday game against Harvard, Martin Luther King game in the afternoon at the Pizzitola Center. They start 3-0. We're going to start doing the math here on what it's going to take to clinch an Ivy Madness berth.
Oh yeah. Well, because when you're in the H and eight and you go 3-0, as good as the 3-0 we've talked about with the URI men in the Atlantic 10, with Bryant in America East, the Ivy League is a short schedule. It's the H and eight. So you play one home, one away against the seven other teams, 14 games. You go 3-0 to start, all of a sudden you're looking at it and saying, wait a second. One, two, three, four. You start looking at it and wow, you really have a jump ahead. That's why the opposite can be true too. If you go 0-2, 0-3 in the Ivy League as a team to start, all of a sudden you're hitting the panic button because you want to turn things around really, really quickly. So you're right. If they can win this game on Monday, not only have you now beat Yale and Harvard, if you potentially win, pretty good. I mean, you're looking at it and saying, you're beating some good teams that you're going to be in the mix with at the end of the year. Because as we've said with the Ivy League and women's basketball, Princeton, Columbia, and you'll get your shot at the heavyweight fight and going up in that weight class. But it's the teams like Yale, Harvard that you're going to have to compete against here if you want to get into Ivy Madness top four. So winning that game at Yale, that's huge. When you have a return game at home, all of a sudden now you look at it and say, all right, when we see them later, we're able to sweep that. Now you're looking at head to head, not all those things. But yeah, in the immediate future, if they can go 3-0, be really impressive. And you're right, we've seen it in the non-conference. We saw the contributions, the jump that some of these players are making. And I look at the score and the box score yesterday, and I just see four players that I'm just not surprised that they step forward, play the way they did. Kyla Jones, you're going to get the contributions, but look at the spread in terms of what they were able to do. Kyla, 19-5. Grace Arnoldi, 17-6. Alyssa Moreland, 12-4. Bella Mauricio, 16 points. Like everybody's there. She goes to the free throw line six times, hits all six. Like they're all doing the right things. It's all spread out. That tells me it's unselfish. Everybody's contributing. There's a buy-in, and that's been constant throughout the season with Monique's team. It's been constant. There's been no, yeah, there's been days where Kyla will, just go off offensively, and she's capable of that. Yeah, there's days where Bella Mauricio can hit five, six threes, and it's like, okay, well, yeah, she's a really good 3-point shooter, especially when she gets it going. But if you're getting this kind of contribution from your top four players, that's going to be difficult to stop because it's unselfish. Anybody can step forward, and that's huge for this program.
And they guard. Yale shoots 39%. I mean, that's been going on all season. Brown is just sticky at the defensive end, hard to play against. And sometimes you watch them from courtside, it doesn't make a lot of sense because they don't have a ton of size. And you would think that a team that is that hard to score against would have some sort of anchor in the paint, you know, somebody who is difficult to play against at the rim. You know, you look at Brown's defensive numbers and you think, all right, who's the 6'4" kid who everyone's trying to avoid while they're trying to make a layup? You know, who is that person inside who maybe isn't a shot blocker but a deterrent in that way? And Brown doesn't really have that. What they do have is a tight group that is bought in, that plays a certain way for Monique LeBlanc. And, you know, I remember when she was hired saying to you, this woman won 20 games at Merrimack. That's a very difficult place to win, a very difficult job. This is a serious person. She has a chance to win at Brown, as good a chance as anybody else who they could have brought in. And, you know, here we are. She's progressing into her career. She's got a few of her players in here now. She's got them playing a certain way that she wants them to play. And you look at this starting lineup, you know, Kyla Jones is a veteran, but aside from her, everybody else is coming back. You know, it's not like this is senior year for Grace Arnoldi or Bella Mauricio or Alyssa Moreland. Like, this is player development in real time. And, you know, I would be so encouraged by that if I was a Brown fan. Just, you know, yes, we recruited these players and we saw potential in them, but look at what they're turning into through their own efforts and through the way we work with them. You know, look at what we could be as a team, as a program, if we continue to bring in players like this, if we hit on another core group like this. And, you know, you're seeing it come out now in terms of the record they have, the chance they have now in the Ivy League, the fact that they match up with Harvard on their home court. If they were to win that game, Coy, and go to 3-0 in the league, you know, I mentioned earlier, you just start doing the math. You're 5-6 the rest of the way. You get to 8-6 in the league. That's probably going to be enough to get you one of the top four spots. You know, if you go 6-5 after a 3-0 start, you're 9-5. I would find it very hard to believe that you would miss Ivy Madness at 9-5. So you're giving yourself chances here. You're putting yourself ahead of the chains, to use a football analogy, without having played Princeton and Columbia, the two heavyweights. You are knocking off the other teams that you need to directly compete against to try to get one of those top four spots in the Ivy. It's just, they're in a great place right now going into that tip on Monday.
Great point about player development. And that is the cool thing about Ivy League basketball, men's and women's, is that it still has some of that traditional style of, we recruited these kids, they came in as freshmen, they are developing. By the time they become juniors and seniors, they're stars for us. They're sticking around a program for 4 years, 5 years in some cases, because you know they're getting their degree at an Ivy League school, getting an Ivy League education, all those things together. It's just it makes for, and there's consistency in the league. Like I look at yesterday and I say, oh, I remember how Jenna Clark came to the Pensacola Center last year, had a good game. You know, she's been a big part of their program here. Like those sorts of, like you're seeing the same players, same names. And when you get a coach that can develop these players into, you know, stars in your program, then you know you have something. And then it just keeps going. Then you just keep developing these players so that you become James Jones at Yale, where it's like every year, somebody else who's been sitting behind the guys that were starring for you last year all of a sudden step forward and you don't miss a beat. So, you know, if Brown can start to do that here with a team like this and potentially get to an Ivy Madness, that's great news for your future, not only this year, but your future too. So it's a great point about player development. And I think Monique and her staff right now are proving that they can develop players. And that is such a key if you're in the Ivy League.
It's 3 o'clock tip on Monday at the Pensacola Center, a special matinee for Martin Luther King Day. The Ivy League will celebrate Martin Luther King across the league. The Brown men will play at Harvard. I think that's a 2 o'clock tip up at Laveides Pavilion. Laveides? Laveites? I always say it wrong. Which is it, Coit?
I think it's Laveides.
I think it is, right?
Yeah, but if there's any Harvard listeners, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Harvard listeners. Sorry.
Sorry, Harvard.
Sorry, Kevin McNamara. If you are listening, his daughter Maggie went to Harvard. Sorry, Maggie.
Oh, I'm like, Kevin didn't go to Harvard.
No,
No way.
Kevin did not go to Harvard. No. Kevin and your Saturday morning partner will be happy to tell you that they both went to Syracuse.
Oh, did they
That's
really? I've never heard that before.
they did. You've heard that a couple times, I'm sure. Yeah, as a BU guy, I've certainly heard a few times that they went to Syracuse.
Oh,
That's,
God.
the big communication school rivalry, obviously.
No worries. When Vermont came to town last week and I had to do my first sideline hit, the broadcast wanted me to talk about TJ Sorrentine, which, starting there, that's painful enough. But then I talked about him, and of course I said, oh, this is a perfect chance for me to needle Scott Cordischi and say, TJ Sorrentine, known for this, known for that, Vermont Hall of Famer. Oh, and he hit a pretty big shot in the NCAA tournament. I think you remember it, Scott. I don't.
Oh boy.
I don't feel bad about reminding you. And of course, Russ is sitting there. Russ Tyler's pumping his fist like, yeah, get him.
Oh, the ongoing dysfunction between you and Scott, I'll tell you.
Oh,
I've said
it's
it
like
before. You
any
guys need
beautiful marriage.
you guys need relationship therapy. You do. You do. I mean, you do. It's just so wonderfully dysfunctional and broken for all of us to see. It really is. It really is. You guys need help. You need intervention. You do. You
It's
do.
fine.
You think it's healthy banter, but it's not. Those of us on the outside look and say, "Oh God, they're at it again." There we go. That's difficult. It's
It's a beautiful thing.
hard to watch. Coit, the last team that we're going to hit on the pod is going to be the Bryant women, who had a nice win at home on Saturday to level their America East record at 2-2. And it was a scenario that had played out already earlier this year in a different game against UMBC. And this time Bryant got it right against New Hampshire, 55-54. Mariona Plannis Fortuny hits a free throw with 6.4 seconds left to snap a tie. And then Bryant not only gets a defensive stop, but they get a defensive rebound to finish the game. Against UMBC, a home game earlier this year, similar situation. They got a defensive stop. They did not get the defensive board. UMBC got a put back to win. Those are the fine margins in conference play between 2-2 and 3-1. The Bulldogs, I know, were frustrated after that one. And, I think it's great to see that when you're put back in that situation, about a week later, that you're able to execute it the second time. And full credit to them for being able to do it and finish off a nice home win, a game that they had to battle throughout the whole 40 minutes. A game that Lynn-Ann Kukoski can put in her pocket and use as another example going forward of, hey, this is different here. We expect different things now. We're going to be a different program now. We're going to be a winning program in year one. I don't care that, it's a start of a rebuild and whatever else. Like, we have enough here now where we can be successful right away. And they've proven that in certain spots here.
Progress in real time. You learn your lessons and you get put in a spot again and you execute. That has to feel so great for those players. And so they continue to make progress, like you said, in year one. Good for the staff for, bringing in the players that they have, like Mia Mancini, who's just continued to be steady. I mean, and keeping around some of the players, getting them to buy in year one, Mariona Plannis Fortuny, obviously. But it's not just her. It's everybody that's been part of this program this year has had the belief that you're right. No, it doesn't matter if it's year one or year five. We're gonna go out there, we're gonna make progress, we're going to win games, and we're gonna compete. And you're seeing that right away. And the support too is what strikes me. There's just a freshness around this program. And I think Lin-Ann put up a tweet, I think it was after the game on Saturday, and it was a picture with her and one of her former teammates. One of her former teammates came to the game. She's like, oh, it's great to see some of the former teammates come out, whatever. And that to me says, like, yeah, she's getting the interest going again. She's getting the support going again. It's new, it's fresh, it's exciting, it's all those things. And when you bring in a new coach, when you're trying to establish things as a program, nothing better than getting support like that. And having an alum who played as part of that program, that obviously helps. So yeah, we're seeing all those good things. It's all positive for Bryant. And yeah, to make progress on the floor the way that they have in year one, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'd love to see her step count after a game on the fifth inning because she's like the Energizer Bunny on the sidelines. And yeah, I firmly believe that the players feed off that they take on the identity of their coach and follow their lead. I think more so in college basketball than in a lot of other places. And certainly if you watch this Bryant team, they are scrappy. They are scratching, clawing throughout the whole game, not necessarily the greatest talent in the league. Not great size, not super dynamic player with the ball in our hands. There's none of that. There's not really, they don't have that, that kid who your eyes are just going to gravitate to and you're going to say, wow, like that's the best player in the world. But they do it as a collective and they do it quite well. You look at what they are right now. You're 9-8 overall, 2-2 in the league. You're going to exceed last year's win total in both columns. In terms of overall and in the league, and you look at what they've done in terms of, like again, we go back to what Brown has done, player development. Look at Plantis Fortuny. She's a good player last year, certainly a good player the year before. She's expanded her game a little bit to the perimeter now. You look at someone like Mia Mancini, who's just come right in and hit the ground running. As a freshman, she's on track to be the America East Rookie of the Year. Has been the rookie of the week 5 times and has been a meaningful contributor in just about every game that they've played, with the exception of a couple where she had rough shooting nights. You look at what they got off the bench yesterday from Megan Bazzioni, plays 31 minutes in this game, has 6 points and 7 rebounds. Someone whose minutes have been a little spotty at times, she's been in and out a little bit when they've squeezed the rotation. Maybe she's found herself on the outside looking in. That you can go to a veteran player like that, a reserve, and say, look, I need you today. Mia's in foul trouble. Naya Scott doesn't necessarily have it today. She's in foul trouble. I need you today. I need you to go out there and give us something. And she's able to do that. She's prepared enough to do that. Mentally, she's in a place where she can go out and do that. I think that's a big credit to the coaching staff there. I think that says a lot about their preparation, about their game plans, about the mindset of their team and where they're at going into a given game over the course of this year.
And we're saying all these things, and we haven't even mentioned the player who came up huge for them on Saturday and had the defensive rebound, and that was Kamari Reynolds. And
Right.
she's a senior, and she looks fully bought in. And that's such a credit to the coaching staff, because you're in your final year. Like, what will be your legacy? Your final year, there's a coaching change that could be difficult. That could be really difficult for any player. And she is bought in, double double. And makes the game-winning play. Like, that's huge. That's huge. And that trickles down to everybody. And so, yeah, we mentioned all those names. We didn't even mention the player that really came up huge for them in that game. And when Kamari can show leadership like that, it's nothing but positive and helpful for the coaching staff here as they're building this thing in year one.
Yeah, Kamari Reynolds, 10 points, 11 rebounds in that game. And like you said, I think it's natural. It's a temptation, I would bet, for a senior to be like, I'm almost graduated. We're really going to do a rebuild my last year. I don't know if I'm feeling that. Let's just
Yeah.
get on to what I'm going to do next, Like, why would I sit here and I'm going to listen to this coach? Like, who really cares what she has to say? Like, I'm 9 months from being out of here. Let's just, cruise
Let's
through
just
and like
play, have fun. Yeah,
Yeah,
right.
that's fine. Like, I'm not playing in the WNBA. Who really, like, whatever. Who cares? Nope, not that kid.
Nope. Nope.
You're gonna go ahead and you're getting defensive boards to win games in the middle of January. Yep, I'd say you're bought in. I'd say you care at this
Amen.
point. So good for her. You're right, Coit. That's a good point. With that, Coit, we will promise everybody else will be back in the show as we get into the week. Gerard Mayo being introduced Wednesday, correct?
Wednesday, correct.
Okay, so later in the week, I would imagine Coit would be able to shake free for another pod where we can update everyone on what's going on with some other teams that we didn't get to and reset the teams that we did get to. Look for that one to drop Thursday or Friday or somewhere in there. Coit, got anything else?
No, I was going to say, Roadie women and PC women are in action. Roadie women as we speak. So yeah,
Yes.
we'll have plenty to talk about with them. Talk about the brown men, react to what happens on Martin Luther King Day at Levitt's Pavilion or
Thank
whatever the
you.
heck they call it.
Thank you.
Or whatever the heck they call
Yeah, up at Harvard, kid. Yeah.
Heaven.
Yeah.
It sounds like Berman when I say that.
No, it's good. I like it.
Heaven.
I like it. It's good. Good. For everybody else, enjoy your NFL Sunday and Monday, for that matter. With weather wreaking havoc up in Buffalo, we have a Monday doubleheader as well in the NFL playoffs. And hopefully, Coit, at some point, you will be back to covering those with the Patriots. We'll see.
Take the break for now and see what the future holds. That's, we got lucky for the first 5 years I was on the job. I covered four Super Bowls in 5 years, so don't you worry.
Pretty
We've
good.
had our spoils. We'll get back to it.
We will. Correct. Thank you all for listening. As always, we will be back with you soon.